This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The governor of the far north region of Cameroon, Mijiyawa Bakari, says members of a local self-defense group detected a Boko Haram suspect riding his bicycle toward an area where Christians were assembling for Christmas prayers on Sunday.
That's Moki Edwin Kinzeka reporting from Yaoundé. Details next.
Also, a UN report warns that hunger in the Horn of Africa is expected to rise in 2017 as the region continues to feel the effects of repeated droughts.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Nigeria has announced what could prove to be a key win against the terror group Boko Haram. President Muhammadu Buhari says militants have been, in his words, crushed in their longtime stronghold in the Siambisa Forest in northeast Nigeria. But just across the border, localities in northern Cameroon saw a string of attacks on Christmas Day, underscoring the continued threat. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
The governor of the far north region of Cameroon, Mijiyawa Bakari, says members of a local self-defense group detected a Boko Haram suspect riding his bicycle toward an area where Christians were assembling for Christmas prayers on Sunday in the town of Mora on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria.
Les membres du comité de vigilance ont sommé.
Bakari says when the vigilantes tried to search the man, he immediately detonated his explosives, killing himself and a nearby civilian by the name of Ibrahim Mahama. He says two members of the self-defense group were also killed. One died at the scene, while another died later at a hospital. The governor says at least eight other people were also wounded in the suicide bomb attack. Local media also reports three other armed attacks occurred at Fotokol, Belgede, and Madam, all on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. The attacks reportedly left several wounded. The fresh violence comes 2 days after Nigeria announced it had chased Boko Haram militants out of their key remaining base in the Siambisa Forest. The forest straddles Cameroon's border with Nigeria. In Cameroon, Governor Bakari says despite of the military success, Boko Haram militants still are a presence in areas along the border.
Nous sommes toujours en situation de guerre.
Bakari says Cameroon is still fighting a war against Boko Haram and residents should continue to be vigilant. As an example, he says the suicide bomber would have attacked a church had he not been identified and stopped by the local self-defense group. Earlier this month, however, Cameroon and Nigeria pointed to the reopening of the border between the two countries for the first time in 3 years, as a sign of progress against Boko Haram. Boko Haram's six-year insurgency has killed more than 25,000 people and displaced nearly 2.3 million, according to rights groups and the United Nations. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Officials in northeastern Congo say government and UN forces are searching for Uganda rebel militias responsible for the killing of more than 24 Christians with machetes over the weekend. Bernard Amis Kalondo is the administrator for the Beni area. He blames the attacks on rebels belonging to the group known as the Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF. He says they attacked several villages on Christmas Eve. More than 20 victims died in attacks on Saturday in Beni, 300 kilometers north of Nyanzale. More than 12 died in Nyanzale yesterday. The rebel movement has been active since the 1990s, but intensified its attacks inside Congo several years ago. Human rights group says hundreds have been killed since 2014.
The UN warns that hunger in the Horn of Africa is expected to rise in 2017 as the region continues to feel the effects of repeated droughts. The Food and Agriculture Organization says millions of people in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia are in need of emergency assistance. VOA's Joe DiCampoa reports.
The FAO says droughts have shattered livelihoods. People have problems getting enough food. Farming families have seen their incomes decline and debts rise. Cereal and seed stocks are low, and milk and meat production is down sharply. FAO senior economist Shukri Ahmed has focused his attention on the region.
In the Horn of Africa, specifically in the lowlands of Ethiopia, the main producing areas of Somalia, and eastern and northeastern parts of Kenya, we are now actually facing a very bad drought condition, and this is in the heels of the worst El Nino situation that in 2015-2016 devastated livelihoods of both crop and livestock producing areas.
El Nino is a series of climatic changes that warm ocean temperatures in some regions, triggering drought in the Horn of Africa, Southern Africa, and elsewhere.
This has created a humanitarian crisis. Close to 12 million people are now depending on food assistance, and the current drought is expected actually to aggravate the already difficult situation.
Ahmed says families raising livestock have little bargaining power to buy food.
Pastoralists are now compelled to sell their livestock, and this has created a huge supply of livestock in the market, while the terms of trade, that is, one cattle or one sheep, what it used to fetch in terms of grain, for instance, has now very much gone down. Very bad for the pastoralist community.
The FAO says making matters worse is the growing number of refugees in East Africa. They're placing an even greater burden on food supplies. The UN agency is calling for urgent support so pastoralists can keep their breeding livestock healthy, and to allow farmers to recover from consecutive lost harvests.
FAO has been assisting Ethiopia, Somalia, and Kenya during the 2015-16 drought by bringing in seeds to the farmers. For instance, in Ethiopia, by assisting 1.5 million households, the largest ever seed distribution, it was able to save an equivalent of $1 billion in food assistance.
Ahmed says the FAO is supporting livestock with feed and vaccinations. The agency is using its new Early Warning, Early Action Fund to provide assistance before a drought reaches its peak. It's part of a larger system that relies on climate data and satellite images to pinpoint areas most at risk of what it calls imminent shock. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The French Foreign Ministry says an international aid worker has been kidnapped in Mali's northern city of Gao. Sophie Petronin works with an NGO working with children suffering with malnutrition. She was abducted on Saturday afternoon. Petronin is of Swiss-French citizenship. The French government said yesterday they are working with Malian authorities to find Petronin. No one has claimed responsibility for the kidnapping. Meanwhile, members of a local Catholic church torched by terrorists 4 years ago finally have returned to celebrate Christmas under armed guard. Several terrorist insurgencies with links to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb operate in the area.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight Live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib, 15 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. President Muhammadu Buhari says Boko Haram militants have been crushed in their longtime stronghold in the Sambisi Forest in northeast Nigeria. And a UN report warns that hunger in the Horn of Africa is expected to rise in 2017 as the region continues to feel the effects of repeated droughts. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
At a time when most prepare to celebrate Christmas and New Year's Day, some Zimbabwean immigrants in Botswana face a critical dilemma as they attempt to travel back home in time to be with family and friends. From Habaroni, Botswana, Martin Ngwena files this report about the challenging journey which the illegal immigrants face.
Zimbabwean Marilyn Magoni works in Habaroni but is eager to share a Christmas meal with friends and family back home this year. The 33-year-old lacks proper travel documents and has not been home for over 2 years. Like many other Zimbabweans, she made an unauthorized entry into Botswana to eke out a living. Now she faces a dilemma as she begins the long journey to her hometown of Gweru in the Midlands. She says the Botswana police harass them whenever they attempt to return home without travel documents. Others do not make it all the way to the other side of the Ramokwevana and Plumtree border post, the busiest entry point between Zimbabwe and Botswana. Instead, they are nabbed by Botswana police and detained for days, fined, and then eventually deported. Men making the crossing illegally into Botswana are subjected to worse punishment with up to 12 lashes on the bare back. Immigrants usually take advantage of the vandalized fence along the two countries' borders, but reaching their destination is not guaranteed as Botswana police and soldiers patrol the area. Sometimes the illegal migrants are lucky and the overwhelmed police exercise leniency. Makwani says she and her fellow countrymen and women at times have to buy their way through by offering the police and immigration officials money for a drink.
It's never easy. The police in Botswana always harass us whenever we are caught on our way home since we have no papers. Sometimes you have to bribe them because you don't have options.
Thousands of Zimbabweans in the diaspora survive without proper documents to stay and work in their respective countries, particularly neighboring Botswana and South Africa. As she begins her journey home, Magoni says she will keep her fingers crossed that she will make it across the Ramokwevana River, which divides the two countries, and then return to Botswana in January without the regular attack most immigrants suffer. Recent figures show that nearly 1 million Zimbabweans visited Botswana in 2015 alone, while thousands are staying in the neighboring country illegally. Reporting for VOA's English to Africa service, this is Martin Ngwenya in Havoron, Botswana.
The government of Zimbabwe has evicted more than 170 farmers from a sugar plantation in Masvingo province. The farmers are diaspora returnees, widows, and children of war veterans who took over more than 2,000 hectares of land 8 months ago. Minister of Lands Douglas Mbomishora sent letters to the farmers to withdraw their rights to farm the land with immediate effect. The farmers are members of the Triangle and Hippo Valley Farmers Association.
A young Zimbabwean has established a successful business in Johannesburg by making everyday items like handbags from waste material, especially plastic. 35-year-old Tamba Tuvuma is a passionate environmentalist and recycle artist. He says his philosophy is simple: throw nothing away, because any rubbish has the potential to be recycled and transformed into funky and functional products. Darren Taylor reports in the first part of a series about people handcrafting high-quality, unique products in South Africa.
At a taxi rank in Johannesburg, commuters and drivers stare at a lithe man in jeans and a white t-shirt as he bends down to collect plastic packets from the dirty, oil-stained concrete.
It's something that I've always been passionate about, litter, since I was a child, you know. It's always been something that's annoyed me, like people throwing away rubbish on the street, you know. I'm from a small town.
As a child in Mutare, Zimbabwe, Tamba Tabvuma began crafting art from litter, using cardboard toilet rolls to make painted flowers. This, he says, was protest art.
To show people that when they throw things away, that it doesn't disappear. They think that once they throw it away, once it's out of their vicinity, they think that it disappears into the ether, but it actually doesn't.
When he moved to South Africa 10 years ago, he says he found treasure troves of trash wherever he went. He says he was extremely upset at South Africans' capacity to litter, but it did spark the idea for his business.
I would go to Joburg City at night after 10 o'clock when it's dead, and then go through the bins and pick up what I could.
Workers look on, some shaking their heads, as Tabvuma scavengers at a dump site.
No, they think I'm crazy.
He sees value in almost everything except rotten food.
I've just got an old gate. You know, milk cartons, the wrappers from the Lay's chips, newspaper, Coke cans, old wire, computer motherboards. We use that. We get a whole jewelry range, which we make from computer motherboards, old wine bottles. After we've had some consumption of them, yes, sorry.
2 years ago, Tabvuma opened a store in Johannesburg's Melville suburb called Republic of Recycle. Its motto in bold black letters on a wall reads, "Oh, what a load of rubbish." In an inner city workshop using industrial sewing machines, Tabvuma and his assistants craft handbags from white fabric plastic bags, blue and purple hats from plastic washing powder bags, and much more.
So this here, it's a milk carton, so we just kind of cut it up in a specific way, and then we kind of fold it together, and it becomes a wallet. And so these backpacks, yeah, I also make these from billboards, PVC from the billboards, yeah. So this is a laptop case, computer bag, file holder. We use also like the billboard.
He says visitors to his store are usually shocked when they see what he makes from things they usually throw away.
So we even have a sign in the shop that says it's all touchable, it likes to be touched. Because people are a bit apprehensive and they don't quite believe that it's made from what they see.
One of Tabvuma's favorite items to make is carry bags made from the huge white plastic bags that once held 50 pounds of maize meal processed by iconic South African company, Iwisa.
The branding has that nostalgic, you know, element to it. I was in England and I gave someone a bag and they love it, eh? Because I guess it reminds them of home and, you know, exactly the kind of...
His goods are in such demand that he now pays people around Johannesburg, like the women who cook food along roads, to collect extra waste materials for him.
It kind of creates a small economy around the waste, you know, so the waste actually becomes a commodity.
But he still roams riversides and delves into dumpsters.
I mean, I find people throw away the most amazing things. I've got an old chair, an antique chair, which I found in a bin. I've just put it together myself, but, you know, going through trash is amazing. I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's really cool, actually. Everyday stuff, you know, like crisps and all that stuff, and, you know. Yeah, but it's quite...
Tabvuma says he's happiest when his products inspire people to recycle, keeping the country cleaner. Wherever he goes, his mantra is, even though we're all different, we all stay on the same planet. We need to be more responsible about how we take care of it. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
In Burundi, youths living with HIV/AIDS say they are still struggling to be accepted by their community. But as Moses Havyarimana reports from Bujumbura, they are finding new ways of living a positive life.
50% of the new HIV infections in Burundi are youths below 25 years of age. Burundi is one of the countries with significantly decreased rate of the new HIV infections. However, 25% of the new infections are through mother to child. This group of youth infected during their birth only know their HIV status after both or one of their parents die. Audrey Inarukundo is now 29 years old. She knew that she was HIV positive in 2002 when she was 15 years old. She says the first time she was told that she was HIV positive, she felt like the whole world has stopped. Her heart was broken and didn't want to live anymore. But her sister helped her a lot. She encouraged her about many things in life and how she could be living in a positive life. Majority of the youth in Burundi who live with HIV or AIDS say that they are discriminated against in the society. This has forced them to create their own network. They say they feel more positive when they come together and share life experiences. Cedric Nininahazwe is the executive director of the network of people living with HIV or AIDS in Burundi. He says the network has helped hundreds of youths to live in a positive life.
When you are in a group that have a common understanding of the same issues, and you know people living HIV, we used to be and we're still having kind of discrimination from our families, from the community, at school, everywhere you go. And then it's important to have a space where you feel free, where you feel that you are with people that understand your life.
Cedric says he joined the network after revealing that he was HIV positive when he was a teenager, not only to provide space and the regrouping of the youth who are infected with HIV or AIDS. The network also carries out sensitization programs and it creates awareness about the virus in the community, most especially the youth. This youth network conducts different sporting activities that sometimes allow them to compete with other Burundians that could help build good relationship between the infected and those who are not. Cedric says that efforts to fight AIDS in the country is significantly declining.
We are losing a part of this new generation. We are not really raising awareness. To be honest, if we still doing what we're doing now in the face of this new generation, there is a risk the effort we're putting raising awareness is reducing.
A 2007 survey by the World Bank showed HIV presence in the general population was at 3%. However, the number had significantly declined to 1.4% in 2011. Since then, no survey was conducted countrywide, and officials say that awareness programs have declined since then. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Sir Bill Workinger, and our engineer Dan Crafton, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, We'll have an encore showing of our program looking at the legacy of U.S. President Barack Obama. Join guest host Esther Githui Ewart and her panel as they examine President Obama's two terms as the U.S. Commander-in-Chief, the legacy of President Barack Obama, on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.